Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, January 19th. Kelsey, do you believe it? January is almost over.
I can't believe it, actually. It's kind of crazy.
Time's been flying, right?
It does fly. Yeah. It goes too fast, actually.
It is. It does. And I think we're getting older faster, too.
I don't know what it is. I don't want to think about it, but...
Time has accelerated.
As you age, it is. Mm-hmm. It goes faster and faster. So I guess that means you just have to savor every moment even more.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, and it's true because a year seems, as you get older, a year becomes a smaller fraction of your life.
Right.
So I think just measuring a year becomes shorter, you know. Because think, when you're like... when you're 10 years old, a year is a tenth of your life.
Right.
You know, now for you, it's 125th. So
exactly.
You know, so it's not a long time.
Not at all.
So, the years are going by and people are getting older and stuff. And, and talking about getting older, you probably heard, you couldn't escape it, that Glenn Frey of the Eagles... passed away yesterday.
I heard that.
Did you ever listen to the Eagles at all?
I'm actually a major Eagles fan.
Really?
Yeah, I love the Eagles. My dad was a big fan or is.
Yeah.
And so am I. And so
I know.
I love them.
It's definitely, they're saying that his death sort of marks the end of a musical generation, that grew up on, not the Beatles really, but let's say, you know, on Hotel California and all that stuff, you know. So that was like the 70s. And I was a child. I mean, I was a teenager back then. So I remember them. The Eagles is definitely one of my favorite bands. Do you have a favorite song of theirs by any chance, like Hotel California?
I love Hotel California.
It's a good song, right?
I like Take It Easy, too. That one's always fun.
Let me play you a clip of the one that's my favorite.
Oh, I like this one, too.
Yeah, that's how I learned of the Eagles. I remember it in 1975. We came here on a trip. I was living in Israel still, right?
Oh, my gosh.
So we came on a trip, and I kept hearing the song, and I didn't know who it was. So I would go to the, I went to the record store and started humming it for them. And, you know, at that time I didn't know very much English, so it was hard to figure out what album it was. See, this part is actually by Don Henley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then Glenn Frey comes in later, but. That's mainly a Don Henley song, but man, do I love this song.
Me too.
Isn't it something?
Yeah, it's great.
And you know that Don Henley is from Texas.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, he's from Paris, Texas. And how do I know that? Because I used to work with a girl that had the hots for him.
Oh!
And she knew because she was from Paris, Texas, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
So it was funny, but they both have excellent voices. And they're definitely the team that wrote most of the Eagles songs. And you know that their song, their album, The Very Best of the Eagles, is still the biggest selling album by a group of the 20th century.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, you know, you would think the Beatles or Rolling Stones or somebody like that. No, it's the Eagles, man.
Yeah, so, they're amazing.
Yeah, so they did a great job. And we're going to miss Glenn Frey. He actually had a solo career for a while, too.
Oh.
And, he had some song like The Heat Is On, and that was from Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh.
Yeah. Here, let me see if I can find it, because that's definitely a Glenn Frey song. And this is a song that he wrote for the movie. So... for Beverly Hills Cop. So I remember this song, it really became big and stuff, and you can hear what he is able to do. But why isn't it playing for me? It's sort of like stuck. There we go.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, because my music is all the way. Now this one
gets
a beat, right?
Yeah.
You can imagine Eddie Murphy driving around Beverly Hills and this song is playing in the background. Yeah, then he had a song, You Belong to the City, and yeah, he had some great songs. So Glenn Frey did it, 67, is it? I think 67 years old.
67.
Yeah.
That's so young.
It is, you know? It really is. And it's pretty depressing too, you know, but because you start thinking about your own mortality, you know, when it's somebody that grew up during your time.
Right.
You know, you're saying, wow, you know.
Life isn't forever.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so apparently they started the Eagles in L.A. In front of, at the front bar of L.A.'s legendary Troubadour night spot. So Glenn Frey and Don Henley met there. They united to be a part of a backup for Linda Ronstadt.
Oh, I love her.
At a Disneyland engagement.
Oh my gosh, how funny. You know, whoa. I need to go to Troubadour. Have you been? I'm sure you've
been. No, I haven't been to Troubadour at all. Is it still around?
It is, I believe. It's really? Right off of Santa Monica Boulevard. Oh, I drive by it all the time, and there, or I used to when I lived in West Hollywood, and there were just lines out the door.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we have to check it out. Yeah, because I've been to the Rainbow and to Whiskey A Go-Go.
And, me too, sure.
And what is it? The House of Blues and stuff, but I've never been to the Troubadour, but it does sound familiar, so maybe it is still around, who knows. But that's interesting. So yeah, I never thought they started in LA, you know, and so that came of a sort of a surprise to me, because I think they're both from different places. Like I said, Don Henley's from Texas. I don't know where Glenn Frey's from. It doesn't really say, or maybe I'm just missing it or something, but yeah. See, Henley brought a Texas-style country sound to the band.
Oh.
And, yeah, and it was tempered and made more sophisticated by Frey, who gave it essential urban rhythms. Frey was born in Detroit, actually.
Oh, Detroit.
Yeah, but he was raised in a nearby suburb. Oh, okay, so, so that's what they're saying. None of the Eagles were, in fact, from Los Angeles.
Mm.
So I guess they all must have moved here. And made the move and met each other here, and the rest is history.
Oh, that's the dream. Awesome.
I know. So we're going to miss him, and it was amazing, the response on Facebook. I mean,
I know.
When it was just announced, every post was Glenn Frey, you know.
You know, it's so funny, because Facebook used to be just, you know, your friends and acquaintances that you kept up with, but now it's become heavily news oriented.
Right, yeah. And also, you know, I mean, you have a lot of followers, a lot of people you don't really know, you know, friends that you don't know.
Exactly.
Because we're like in entertainment, so we're out there, you know, and people know us and stuff. But otherwise, yeah. So, you know, for me, it's not family and friends anymore. To me, it's
exactly.
Like, you know, I have like 4,000 friends or something. I don't even know why. Most of them I don't even know in person. But
exactly.
But that's the way social networks work, you know. So, yeah, so people post all kinds of things. And it was heartening to see so many people knew him and loved him as much, you know.
Yeah.
But the Eagles is a great American band, and I'm always going to love them. Like I said, One of These Nights is still one of my all-time favorites. I have a few all-time favorites, and that's one of them. You know, it's one of those songs where you never get enough of it.
I know. It never gets old. You can listen to it over and over again.
Exactly. Not many songs are like that, you know. But
I agree.
But some songs, the more you play them, the more you want to play them. And I remember back in the 70s when the Eagles were popular, there was FM station wasn't really around, so there was more AM radio, so it wasn't really stereo or anything. But what they did is everybody was like top 40 stations, so they would play the same 10, 20 songs every day, all day, and you get sick of all of them.
Exactly.
You know, so
kind of like Sirius today. I mean, I love Sirius Radio. I have it, but they do play a lot of the same songs over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because also there are niches there, you know, so they have like the 70s, the
80s, exactly. The 90s. So how many songs can you possibly play? I mean, there's exactly. only so many within that.
I know.
Time frame.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I didn't really renew my subscription to Sirius. You know how you get it? You get a new car, you get it free
exactly,
for
you
6
get it,
months.
Right.
But I've done it before where I actually got the subscription. Do you know how hard it is to cancel? I
mean, you're kidding.
Well, you have to call. Well, look. I mean,
those kind of things.
Yeah, but no, I mean, the thing is, look, you'll call, they'll cancel it, but not before they run you through the ringer in trying to get you to stay.
I hate that.
You know, I know. It's just, you know, so every time, I mean, I think this happened to me twice where I had a subscription and I canceled it. And I call there, and they always bring me to a point where I get so frustrated, I start yelling at them.
Right.
I'm like, ma'am, I think I told you, you're not listening to me.
Right.
I said, no, I do not wish to continue. And
right.
they keep on going. Oh. Because they're really desperate to keep their subscribers, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's also, you'll find that when you, if you ever try to get your free credit report online, then they sort of make you sign up for a free thing. And after 7 days when you try to cancel it, my God, man, they give you a hard time until you cancel. And again, it's not like hard time like they say we're not going to cancel it, but they won't leave you alone.
Exactly.
You know, you have to go through a whole process just for
they
want
to get to the point where you're just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
I'll go. Yeah, for $2, I'll do it.
Oh, it's not even worth arguing with you for $2. Yeah.
Well, I was going to introduce our guest, but I see he's just calling in. So let's go ahead and take that. And we're going to be joined by Brian Laszlo. Brian, are you with us this morning?
Yes, I am.
How are you, Brian?
I'm very good. How are you?
We're good. I'm sitting here with Kelsey, and we're waiting for your call. We're so busy talking the first 15 minutes that I neglected to introduce you in advance. So I'm going to introduce you now, Brian.
Sure.
You sent us a copy of the book, The Marijuana Project, and as opposed to what some might think, this is actually a fictional story. And so you have a background in security. You're a security expert. Tell us a little bit about your background first. How did you get?
Sure. So I've been in the security industry my whole career. I started out with an installation firm and then did some work for the Department of Justice. And then I've been a security consultant for the last 15 years or so.
Uh-huh.
And had a myriad of different clients, including a couple of years ago, a medical marijuana production facility, which kind of spearheaded the idea for the book.
Oh, wow. So, but you were in different kinds of industries before that, right?
All various industries, yeah. Oh, right. You know, all kinds of industrial and commercial clients, some government clients, yep.
Right. And I presume that you're still doing this because you're using a pseudonym for your book, and your face is blurred out on the in the book. So,
oh, I see that. Oh my
right?
gosh.
Yeah, the face is blurred.
So you're still undercover.
The face is blurred, kind of a funny thing, you know, on the book. I mean, anybody who did 10 minutes of serious research would figure out, you know, my real name. But,
right.
You know,
right.
I just didn't want it. You know, yes, I am still in the security industry, so I didn't want somebody simply to Google my name and come up with a fictional book.
Right.
Got
no,
it.
No, that's pretty cool, yeah. So you've been doing this for a while. So now, so what kind of security were you doing exactly?
Oh, several things. I do risk assessment. So I will go into a facility, you know, and basically evaluate their risk and their vulnerabilities. I do what's called penetration testing, you know, trying to break into a facility, you know, hired by the client to try to break into their own facility.
Right. Oh, that's a cool challenge.
Yeah,
it is. It is really neat, I'll be honest with you. And then I also did some security manager work. So I kind of ran the security department like I did for this marijuana facility.
I see. Okay. So so how did this dispensary thing come about for you?
It was a call out of the blue. You know, some of the things in the book are actually things that happened, and one of them being, you know, I got the call out of the blue from a gentleman saying that, he was representing a medical marijuana production facility, trying to get a license, and I honestly didn't even know the law had even passed in my state. So I thought it was a joke to begin with. I'm right. Like, okay, who's, you know, who is this? Who's playing a joke on me? Until wow. You know, a couple minutes into conversation, I realized it wasn't.
Wow. So that's one of the states that early on started introducing medical marijuana. So you're saying the production facility, so we're not talking about the dispensary here. We're talking about, what, a big operation?
Yeah, where they actually grow it. Yeah, no. Wow. In the state I'm in, they separate the dispensaries from the production facilities.
Right.
And so this is the actual production facility that grows it from seeds all the way to, right, you know, to the final product that goes to the dispensary to go to the patient.
Yeah, and some of those could be huge.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, you're talking millions of dollars worth of inventory.
Yes, whoa. This person will remain unnamed. I did hear that you can just scatter the seeds and they grow like weed.
Well, not necessarily.
I'm not an expert on the actual growing. So, right.
Hence the name.
No, but I got to tell you, you need a lot of patience and intensive care of plants of marijuana. It's not just, it's not as simple as just throwing a seed out there.
It's not simple at all. No. I mean, yeah. I was stunned, to be honest with you. I mean, not only the cross-pollination that goes on in order to get the strains that you want, but the meticulousness of temperature and humidity and light.
Oh, wow.
And making, you know, and you know, to get taking care of infestation. And I mean, it is,
yeah, it's not easy.
It's far from simple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these are like professional, like they do it almost scientifically in a business manner, right? It's not like people in the back alley making deals there.
Well, but these were, that, you know, and that's the funny thing about it, right? So, you know, when you have a state that has this new medical marijuana law and they're hiring growers, well, who are they hiring?
Right.
They're hiring people that a week earlier were, you know, running from the, you know, hiding from the cops to make sure they didn't get caught, you know, with the, you know, with the facility in their basement. And so it's a real adjustment for them as well as everybody else to take that and go into a facility that's now legal and, you know, now you have to abide by some rules and regulations that, you know, which makes it as a security expert pretty challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can see how there'll be a great need for security. You're talking about a lot of money, a lot of resources here. And yeah, you know, sometimes I think about all the new industries that have been spawned with this marijuana revolution now, you know.
No kidding.
Yeah, and there's so many different businesses that have thrived with this. So it's not just the actually selling of the weed, but there you have an example of a security expert that has a whole new field now. You know?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. And a challenging one, for sure.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the book. For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Brian Laszlo, and his book is The Marijuana Project, and this is a fictional book, and Brian obviously based it on your history, right, on your own story.
I did. It's based, you know, I mean, the story in the book is fictional, but certainly there are, you know,
it's inspired by
stories within the book that really happened in some form or another.
Right. Yeah. So you based on your experience a lot of the book.
Yeah, it's kind of called, you know, fiction based on fact type of situation. Yeah.
Right. And it's usually, I think, easiest to write about something you know about, right? So there's your experience.
And, you know, you get inspiration, you know, from things that have happened to you in the past, and you know, and about the industries themselves.
Yeah. So tell us briefly what the plot is about in the book.
Sure. So it's about a security consultant who has an ethical dilemma about taking on this medical marijuana client. He's a conservative guy who is anti-drug, and so having, you know, all of a sudden presented himself to have a pretty good opportunity to make some money with this new client, and deciding, well, what are the pros and cons of doing that? And the book, you know, goes through his story of all the things that happened to him and how he keeps flip-flopping and how his decision changes from pro to con. But in doing that, I really try to shed light on both sides of the medical marijuana debate,
right,
because there are, you know, valid points on both sides, and I think my book is pretty well down the middle as far as, you know, really showing the pros and the cons, and so people understand, oh, well, I hadn't thought of that on that side or that on that side.
Yeah. Right.
And then adds the security element to it, which some people find interesting. And
that is so interesting. I never thought about the need for that,
right.
But it's so relevant.
Right. And
yes,
it's probably
it
dangerous too, right? I mean, you probably have a lot of criminals trying to get at that.
Yeah, I mean, it can be. It hasn't been so far.
Good for you. Okay, good.
But it can be. And so, you know, hopefully all that education is woven into a fun suspense story.
Sounds good. Now, the headline says the Marijuana Project exposing the facts of a growing industry and its consequences. What do you mean by consequences? What are some of the things we need to consider legalizing marijuana?
Well, so I'll talk about medical marijuana, right, as
right.
opposed to recreational, so that's a different ballgame entirely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, some of the consequences are, of course, the security issues.
Sure.
But also, you know, because it's still a federal Schedule I drug, there is, well, not little, there's virtually no legitimate medical research done on its effects long term, what diseases in it is actually helpful for. I don't know if you know anything about it, but you know, THC and CBD are two of the cannabinoids in marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Right.
THC causes the high and CBD doesn't, and you know, various percentages of those two are more effective to fight, you know, to fight the effects of different diseases.
Right.
Right. So letting someone get a marijuana prescription isn't, I mean, it's not that simple. You need to know what kind of diseases it helps, and doctors have to be aware of that. And if there's no research, how can we do that?
Right. And that's really what I bring out. You know, the fact is, how can you blame doctors for being a little hesitant when there's no research and people are just, you know, begging to sue them,
right?
And at the same time, you can't blame the advocates because there's no doubt whatsoever that it does, you know, a lot of good for patients.
Right.
That's
true.
It needs to be researched to figure out, you know, to get some kind of consistency.
Right. And you know, I mean, you say there's not been a lot of research. I've read that there's actually been quite a few studies trying to always prove the dangers of marijuana, but hardly anything about its benefits or its the positive side of it. So I think so. You're right. You know, I think we need a lot more research on this in this area to really find out if what we're dealing with here. You know,
right. And I would beg to differ even on that statement.
Yeah,
there have been no studies.
Really?
What I would consider, so let me define studies.
Uh-huh.
There have been no legitimate medical studies.
Mm.
Really?
For
wow.
either side.
Yeah.
Okay? There's a ton of anecdotal stories.
Sure.
There's, you know, if you want to call a study, you know, that this person, you know, saw 15 people improve, okay, but that's not a medical study
right.
That any medical association would, you know,
right.
would latch on to, or
right.
any doctor would latch on to, for that matter. So I don't think there's been, you know, I don't think there's been anything on either side, and
yeah.
for legitimate reason, the fact that I was still federally classified. But you know, I think that's the whole point, is that without the studies, I don't think anybody knows.
Right, yeah. And there's no way to optimize the benefits of the drug without knowledge of it.
Right,
right. It's silly. It's trial and error for patients all the time. You know. Where if you had some kind of standard that, okay, we have all these patients and we realize, you know, that a 22% of CBD and 5% of THC is affected for children's epilepsy,
mm-hmm.
that would be great.
Right.
But it doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of it may be proprietary growing that people, you know, for the growers and not wanting to give out the information. But I think a lot of it is, there's no governing body or anything in order to gather the information and produce a valid study.
Yeah. Now, did you yourself face this dilemma when it was first presented to you, the way Sam Burnett, your character, is facing the same thing?
To some degree. I mean, I took some liberties which was kind of fun to do in a fictional book.
Uh-huh.
But certainly I had to think about it, and I had to talk to people and say, hey, you know, what do you think about this? Because it wasn't a, oh, yeah, sure, or you know, right off the bat.
Right. And how long ago did you start, actually, in this industry, as far as the security for the marijuana industry?
A little over a couple of years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it's pretty new. And
oh, it's pretty new, yeah.
Yeah. Well, sounds good. So, I mean, are you are you okay with it now? I mean, obviously, if you're doing it, you're okay with it as an industry.
Sure. For medically, yes. I mean, having you know, been at the facility for a couple of years, they're not a client anymore, but they were for a couple of years.
Right.
You know, I got to meet a lot of people who benefited greatly from it.
Right.
And those are simply stories you can't ignore. So, you know, I'm in favor of it. But I'm in favor of it with the caveat that, look, we if we're going to do this, we got to do it right.
Right.
We need these studies. Unfortunately, a lot of people that are pro medical marijuana, you know, immediately are therefore pro recreational, and it turns people off, and you know, or at least some people off.
Yeah.
And then people that are totally against it, you know, aren't right either, because it clearly does help people. So.
Right.
Yeah. I'm a believer in it, but I really, you know, something's got to be done, and some legitimate research, you know, needs to take place for sure.
Right, and I'm sure after reading the book, we'll understand it a little better.
I hope so.
Yeah, we're talking to Brian Laszlo. Of course, the book is The Marijuana Project. I see you have a website.
Yep, and the book is available on Amazon.
Right, and it's available on Amazon. Also, you guys can find out more on the website, which is called themarijuanaproject.org.
Correct. Yep.
Right. And you guys can find out more about Brian and about the book and everything. I see you have a blog here and everything. So that's pretty cool. So now, do you work only in one state, or do you?
I work nationally.
Nationally.
Wherever the projects lead me. I live on the East Coast, but you know, certainly I've had a lot of clients all over the place. California as well. Certainly, I've been in your city many a time.
Oh, okay, cool. And I guess people can hire you if they want. Contact you through the website.
Absolutely.
If anybody's in the medical marijuana industry, you need security consulting or any aspect of the security, Brian is the one to go to.
Well, I appreciate that.
Of course. The book again, The Marijuana Project, a novel about medicine and morality. So the character does go through some, reflections and about his opinions and how he views everything. And that sounds fascinating. So, you know, one man's struggle with something that I think the entire nation is struggling with right now.
Right, and I think that's why it's kind of timely, is that, you know, through this character, people can say, oh, yeah, I kind of see, I believe, you know, I understand that half, and now I understand that half, and hopefully it helps to clarify the struggle and make everybody see both sides of the issue.
Yeah. Now, finally, I just, you made a distinction between recreational and medical,
mm-hmm.
And you don't seem to be so much in favor of recreational marijuana. Is that true?
I am not. I personally am not. I'm not in favor of recreational.
And why is that?
Well, you know, I think it's a similar issue to my issue of the lack of research on medical.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody knows the long-term effects.
Right.
I really don't. I agree with the pro-recreational marijuana's point of view that it's, hey, you're self-medicating like alcohol or anything, you know, or tobacco, which are legal, and that's all true. But just look at the research that was done, you know, it has been done on the long-term effects of tobacco and alcohol.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So at least people are going in with their eyes wide open.
Right.
I mean, you know, you smoke, if, you know, you don't know the bad side effects of smoking, then, you know, your head's been in the sand for quite some time.
Right. But, you know, if someone decides to smoke marijuana in their own home and stuff, what damage or what concern is it of anybody, you know? I mean, the thing is just if someone wants to take a chance on things, I mean, we make decisions about what we put into our body all the time. And I just, you know, I personally think if somebody wants to do something like this, there's no victim here unless you're, you know, you're willing to take health chances or whatever. You know, I don't see the reason to continue fighting this and putting people in jail and everything for just dealing with a plant.
Well, that's different, Sid. Yeah. You know, being against recreational marijuana doesn't mean I think that everybody that uses it should go to jail. I mean, I think those are two very separate issues.
Okay.
But, you know, I think that a case can be made, and I really detail this in the book, about causality versus correlation and which it is, that marijuana is a gateway drug. I don't think we know enough about that to know whether it is or not.
Right.
And plus the idea that, you know, yes, if you don't interact with people who are in your home smoking marijuana, does it have a negative effect on anybody else? No, but that, you know, that's a very tight, you know, limitation of behavior during youth.
Yeah.
You know, talk about, you know, the smoking marijuana and driving a vehicle is just as dangerous from the research I've done as drinking and driving.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we can make that illegal, you know, but using marijuana the way you would alcohol, like even having coffee shops and stuff like in Amsterdam and that, I don't see how it can hurt anybody, you know, you know, like you said, there's been a lot of research on alcohol, and none of it is really encouraging. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, you get drunk. Most of the time, you're not a very pleasant person to be around, you know. And but, you know, I mean, that's a personal thing. But, no, I was just curious as far as to how you were able to distinguish the benefits of either one, you know. And
So I don't see a benefit to the recreational.
Right.
You know, you may end up, you know, in, you know, when whatever down the road enough research is done, you may end up being right that, in fact, you know, it is non-harmful even from a recreational use if presented with the same set of laws with driving like alcohol, that you may be correct.
Right.
But I don't know that.
Right.
I do know that there are positive effects medically.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But so I guess maybe, you know, being the conservative person I am, I guess I'm just siding on the ear of caution, you know, siding on caution.
Right. And you'd rather have something scientific before you make a decision like that, which makes sense.
I think that's
prudent. Yeah. Okay, Brian. Brian Laszlo, the book is The Marijuana Project. You guys can get it on Amazon, also on the website, which is themarijuanaproject.org. And then you can contact Brian there as well. Brian, thank you so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Our pleasure.
A wealth of information and a novel that you guys can learn a couple things from, I think, is a good bet. So, Brian, all the best to you and much continued success.
You too now. You take care, both of you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Yeah, you see, that's interesting to me because there's somebody who's involved in the marijuana industry and still has certain reservations about it.
I know. You know. It's so interesting. That's right up your alley to talk about.
There you go.
It is interesting.
Yeah, but let me correct you on that. And getting the recommendation from the doctor.
Uh-huh.
It's called a recommendation, not a prescription, right?
Oh.
A rec. So there's specialized doctors in it. And the thing is this, all you have to do is get it, go in, give some kind of an ailment, and you're going to get your recommendation. So it's not difficult at all.
Right.
Yeah, it's not. They don't put you through the ringer at all.
Right. That's what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that they're, you know, anyone can essentially get it.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's not a lot of research on the benefits or what ailments it actually treats or anything like that. So
that's true.
How can they make a fair judgment on whether or not they should?
Right.
Give
and
that?
I can tell you that a lot of people that go to the dispensaries use it for recreational use as well. But you can see, I mean, in my opinion, there's no damage to it, you know, maybe because I'm a user too. You know. But no, I mean, I believe, like, you know, not to intervene in people's lives and things that don't affect other people, you know.
Right.
And that's the bottom line for me, you know. I mean,
I agree. I mean, I don't think it's harmful either, but the point he made was really interesting, I thought, particularly pertaining to tobacco.
Yeah.
Because a long time ago, you know, when my grandparents were growing up, they didn't know it was bad.
That's true. Yeah, it was the coolest thing.
Yes. Yeah. It was so cool. Everybody did it. They didn't know it was bad. And then, you know, now, like, my grandma has COPD, and she was exposed to secondhand smoke all throughout her childhood. Wow. And but they didn't know any better.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
What if that happens with marijuana?
Yeah.
I mean, do we know? I don't know.
Well, what if, you know? But people take on their own risks, you know? I mean, I think, I don't know.
I agree. They do.
Yeah. You know, and the bottom line is this, though. All that doesn't matter. What matters is if people want to smoke, they'll smoke no matter what.
Is that true?
Question is, do you keep them as criminals, or you just go, you know what, it's just a friggin' plant, you know? I mean, you know, you look at the plant and it's so innocent and beautiful and everything, and you go, how can this possibly be so bad, you know?
No, people, I think that's
insane. People don't die on marijuana. They don't OD. I mean, some people will eat edibles and they start freaking out and stuff, but they should know better.
Right.
You know, but for the most part, I mean, it's just a plant. I find a lot of people, it helps them a lot. Mm-hmm. It helps calm me down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the arguments about kids using it and people driving under the influence, all these things still apply the way they do to alcohol. You know, I mean, it's like just because kids might do it, we can't start banning everything for adults, you know. I mean, yeah, it's just everything that we talk about is our kids. Okay, well, you know, educate your kids a little bit to stay away from things. And not ban it for everybody because you can't control your kid.
Right.
You know, so things like that. Or if you can't drive without being under the influence, don't do it, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, so that's that.
The big debate.
The big debate. Always coming back to marijuana.
I know. We've been on that topic quite a bit lately.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. They're showing a picture of Glenn Frey here, probably from the 70s, holding a cigarette, too.
Oh, really?
So that's interesting because, yeah, and, you know, I've been watching some older movies, and, I mean, people light up cigarettes all the time.
I know.
In closed spaces, too, you know? And it's totally normal and natural.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, just fairly recently, smoking in you know, restaurants and stuff was banned. I mean, I remember when they would still ask you, smoking or non-smoking.
I know. That's crazy. Or on an airplane. I mean, what is it? Does the smoke stop as soon as it gets to the non-smoking section? Come on. That's ridiculous.
I know.
I mean, people used to smoke in airplanes. It's so unbelievable. Unbelievable, you know. But we were talking about, I mean, when they write the movies, they don't have to make the people smoke. But in all the old movies, people were smoking. It's like they made it a point to put cigarettes in their hands because that's how people were.
Yeah.
You know? How amazing, man. Times have changed.
It's pretty crazy. I've been on an old movie kick as well with Netflix.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched An Affair to Remember the other day. It was really cute.
Really? Who's in it?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. The name is escaping me. Famous older actor.
That's an old movie. Like, what, Gregory Peck or something? No,
that doesn't sound familiar.
No? Who else?
Marlon Brando, maybe.
Okay. An Affair to Remember. Well, let's just Google it. I mean, we don't have to be stupid anymore in this age.
I know. Listeners are probably wanting to scream at us.
Yeah, they probably already figured it out, right? Yeah, it looks like Cary Grant.
Ah, Cary Grant.
Right? That's how it looks like to me. Let's see. How come it's not? I mean, I'm looking at IMDb here.
Uh-huh.
Cary Grant and Deborah Kerr.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You see, I said Gregory Peck, I meant Cary Grant. I always confuse them. I don't know why, but yeah, he's very famous. So was that a good movie?
It was. It was good. I enjoyed it.
A couple falls in love and agrees to meet in 6 months at the Empire State Building. Wow. Pretty cool. Yeah.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. So, let's see. So, who else are we talking about? I guess there's a lot of stuff going on, but I guess we said everything about Glenn Frey that we could.
Mm-hmm.
In Germany, there's a suspect facing trial. He's 95 years old, and he's being accused of Auschwitz crimes.
What?
Yeah. I mean, this is like 95, so he's still alive, obviously, from... And it shows you how World War II and the Holocaust is not that long ago.
It's not.
You know, I mean, somebody's still alive. He was born in 1903.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm sorry. He wasn't.
No way.
Right? Let me think. No, later. I'm confusing this with the older man, which is another the oldest man, which is another story.
Mm.
But no, this one, he's 95 years old, and the war ended, 60 years ago? So there you are, 70 years ago, actually.
95, and he's on trial. What are they accusing him of?
Working at Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
And being an accessory.
Oh, wow.
So they're saying they're not showing that he actually did any killing, but he was an accessory to at least 3,600 murders over 1 month.
Mm. Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they're saying he might not travel because of his health and all that stuff. But they're saying this happened right about the time when Anne Frank and her family arrived at Auschwitz. Anne Frank, of course, wrote the Diary of Anne Frank, mm-hmm. which is sort of like a recount of what happened when people were hiding. Anne Frank was hiding in Amsterdam with her family. I actually went to her house.
Did you?
In Amsterdam. It's a museum. And they show you, they built in what they called an annex, which is like another separate house or apartment, whatever, behind a bookcase. So, and that's where they were hiding, I think, for 3 years or something.
Oh,
a family.
My gosh.
So you can actually go and see that.
That's and amazing.
They would never have been caught unless somebody somebody reported them, I think, or something. They were trying to hide. There was a storefront there that you couldn't even tell that anybody was hiding there.
Wow.
So their location was given away, and they were taken to Auschwitz, and yeah.
Have you read the book?
No, I haven't read her diary, to be honest with you.
Me neither. I want to, though. It's
yeah,
a classic.
It's very interesting, yeah.
It's like, it's but on
I
my
do
list.
Know, I do know the story from going there and haven't been there in person. It's pretty powerful. I mean, you can see where the kids were. They would draw on the walls and stuff. I mean, can you imagine being cooped up in a place like that for years?
That's crazy.
Being afraid that at any moment you might die and be
right.
captured.
What? How big was it?
It's like a two or a three-story house, I think. Not that big. In Amsterdam, the houses are very narrow and tall.
Yeah.
So when you go in Amsterdam, like even to restaurants and the bathroom is upstairs, the staircase is always very steep because there's not a lot of room for the stairs.
Right, I remember that about Europe in general.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not a big house, let's say, but then when you count the annex in the back, there was enough room there for a family in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a family of non-Jews that were hiding them and helping them out. So,
wow.
I guess her father survived. So after the war, he published her diary.
Mm.
They discovered it and published it. So yeah. So at any rate, that was the story in Auschwitz, and apparently this man is still alive, Nazi war criminal. At least he's been accused as one, and. Very sad. I've been on this kick of like World War II now for a few weeks, reading everything, watching movies. I don't know. It's sort of like just dawned on me. I got like turned on by understanding the whole war because it was such a significant war. And the funny thing is my dad grew up during that time. He was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But so he was always into World War II movies and things like that. And he would take me. But as I grew up, it didn't have that much attraction to me. But now I picked up a book on World War II, started reading this, and I just became fascinated about how close we were to the world being a totally different place than it is today.
It's crazy. You know? And what fascinates me is how such a large group of people can be so manipulated.
Right, and live,
right?
That is
fascinating to me.
I know. By one man.
Right, and they're not unintelligent people.
Right.
I mean...
Yeah. They were just desperate. They're saying that World War I was not ended in a good way, and that's what led to World War II. In other words, Germany from the First World War was left humiliated. They were stuck with, like, what's the word I'm looking for? When you give someone money back, reparations. They were expected to pay money to fix a lot of things that they destroyed, and apparently it was more than they could handle anyway. So people were disillusioned. The economy was bad, and then Hitler came along and found the Jews as the where he can blame all the problems.
Right.
And that's how things started, you know. And then he built a formidable war machine and just blitzed country after country, you know. And the almost all of Europe fell to the Nazis, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, if America hadn't joined the war and helped out, the world would be a different place today.
I think so.
You know, and the Japanese were no fun either. I mean, they were like, they were actually the ones that brought us into war with Pearl Harbor.
Right.
But also, I mean, it was a long time coming that the U.S. would join the war in Europe because it was becoming very dangerous. Very dangerous. And, you know, I mean, there were times where Britain was afraid that they would fall and all that, but they had Churchill, thank goodness, who in my view, along with Einstein, the most important people of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So, I really want to read her diary now.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah.
I know.
I'm going to.
It's a fascinating war. I mean, if you just, we know of the 6 million Jews that were dead. And those were civilians. But as far as military, I mean, you would just... It's mind-boggling, the numbers.
How do you feel?
Millions of soldiers, you know?
Yeah. How do you feel about him being tried? I mean, at 95, do you think that they should just, you know,
let him go?
Let him live out his life, or...
No, I don't think
so. You don't think
so? I think they should try him as long as he's alive, yeah. I mean, those atrocities were unheard of, you know? And the thing is that... It's more like for revenge than anything else. It's obviously not going to reform him in any way.
Right. I mean,
it's not going to help anybody.
You know, every day is like a gift at that age, you know.
But you need to show that all these criminals are not out of reach, you know.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. So, so that's that. And World War II. Something I'm into right now, so that's nice. And they have, so I found on Netflix, they have this whole series, World War II in color. When you think about all the movies we see, they're all black and white, right? So they colorized all the movies, and I mean, that's like hours of work. I don't know how people would do this, you know, but they do, and it looks amazing. You get to see history in color. So that's pretty cool too.
I'll have to check that out. I love Netflix. I think it's a revolution.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot going on there. I know. And finally, a teen in Pakistan cut off his hand after a cleric accused him of blasphemy. So apparently this teenager misheard what the cleric was saying. The cleric was asked... To those present, to raise their hands if they did not love Prophet Muhammad. And the teen mistakenly raised his hand. You know, he probably asked who here loves Muhammad or something.
Right.
So when the cleric accused him of blasphemy, the kid went home, cut off his hand, brought it back to the cleric to show him.
Oh, my gosh.
And apparently his family and his father are proud of his actions.
Oh.
There you go. That's the kind of societies. That's why I'm saying, folks, if you can, if you're another part of the world, come here. Oh. We love immigrants.
Oh, my gosh.
Even though Donald Trump doesn't. But yeah, this is a place to live. We don't have to cut hands here. We don't have to deal with shit like that.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
And very sad.
Yeah. So, Kelsey, it ended up raining yesterday. Did you see the rain
yes.
at all?
Yes.
So it's probably going to rain again. And I got to tell you, I'm very, very happy with my AccuWeather app because...
Really? I should get it.
Yeah, because the app, the iPhone app on weather... It's totally useless. It's never right. There's never any rain in it. AccuWeather will tell you. You're going to have a shower and exactly when it'll be.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens that way.
Oh, my
gosh. So get AccuWeather app. That's a lot more accurate than the iPhone weather
Good to
app.
Know. Yeah, yeah, you're right. iPhone app is bad.
Yeah, it's never right, you know. It'll tell you hot. It'll be cold. It'll tell you cloudy. It'll be sunny. And it never says rain.
Oh, goodness.
All right, Kelsey. Well, that's it for today.
Yes.
Another great show. Thank you to Brian for calling in. Brian Laswell. Laszlo, I'm sorry. The book, The Marijuana Project. And so thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.